Hello. I'm just getting so frustrated with Zoom these days because it tells me another meeting's in progress and then it tells me the host and I'm like, I am the host. I'm not in another meeting. Like, please. I hope that Kimberly can get in okay. I never had any problems with Zoom up until just a couple months ago, and they'd start to do these crazy messages. Oy. All right. So, hi, everybody. I see everybody. I see Lynn's in my living room with the light behind her, or my kitchen. The kitchen, yeah. Getting ready for Shine. So, Lynn's here. Yay. All right. Chat. Let me put the chat up and let me put the participants. There's 21 of you here. So where's Kimberly? Did Kimberly, can you make sure, can somebody text Kimberly? Lynn, can you text Kimberly, make sure she has the right link?
Yeah, I just sent
Okay.
her a Facebook message.
Okay, good. Good. We got a good turnout today, guys. I guess this childhood trauma thing is intriguing, huh? Yeah, I think I'm excited about it. I'll give you a little rundown and maybe Lynn can share and add to it while we're waiting for Kimberly to come on. But a few, not too many years ago, there was this whole thing, this adverse childhood events study that went on, and it got big publications. And what they discovered was that traumas in childhood could affect you and illnesses, physical illnesses in childhood. And I don't mean just physical traumas, I mean emotional traumas, but can affect you in your adult life. And a trauma isn't always as big as you might think it is. I think a lot of us have had big traumas, right? Big traumas, the death of a parent, divorce, abuse, et cetera, but or bad accident. But some of us didn't. What we had was we were little kids who heard words from well-meaning but and well-intentioned, but maybe not well-educated parents who really didn't have training, which most parents don't, right? And how to speak to kids in a way that is empowering. And so those get buried and locked in the nervous system too as trauma. And a lot of times those things can have, result in physical trauma later or physical symptoms later. There's a really great book that I listened to a couple of years ago called Childhood Disrupted. And she shared a lot of stories about people, kids, people that she'd worked with that she interviewed who had had these traumas as kids. And were experiencing really horrific symptoms and autoimmune diseases and thyroid conditions and gut issues and cancers and stuff as adults or as teenagers. And it was once that she learned these strategies of testing and doing this ACEs study, ACEs test, and identifying people who were at risk and then supporting them through processes. And she gives a lot of great resources in the book of different processes that can help to clear some of those traumas in later life. Well, and then it was just for me, it was so like heart-wrenching listening to this book. And it was like, is there a happy ending? Are we going to circle back to some of these kids? I mean, one child watched her mother get murdered by her father. I mean, you want to hear like the most horrific trauma you could experience, right? And this lived in her nervous system for so long. But she did circle back and revisited some of these and told the story of their transformation, which was very encouraging because it was, I mean, some of these were, they were just heart-wrenching types of things. So if you're really easily disturbed emotionally, it may not be the best book to read unless you just skip to the back and go, this is how they turn out. And then you can go read their stories later. Who likes to know the ending before they read something that's horrible like that? I mean, because it was like, poor. So that woman actually was able to overcome that through, therapies and through physical things and through food and nutrition and nourishing her physical body in different ways. But reading that was like, I mean, it was really heart-wrenching. So, any word from Kimberly? Is she? Yeah. Okay. She's on her way.
Yeah,
Okay.
on her way.
Okay. And
There,
Lynn.
there's something, if it's okay, that
Yeah.
I
Yeah,
share.
please.
So, on my, because it's such a long drive to the airport, my daughter and I were driving up there, and she was driving me up there anyway. We were talking, and she shared this article with me about this mother who, her child would always scream. All this child would do is scream, and couldn't put the child in a the car seat. They go to the store, and they'd be she'd be screaming and just scream and scream, and it would be, this woman would go to the store and put headphones in so she wouldn't have to listen to her child scream. And so we were, she and I, my daughter and I were talking about how nobody, this is a Facebook thing, and everybody was basically shaming this mother, but nobody talked about, why is this child screaming?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we often get just so busy in the life we think we are supposed to be living. And sometimes what's really most important is that you take time and look at that child and say, I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, with my grandkids, I don't say it's okay when they have their meltdowns. I just hug them and say, I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah. To know that they're there and being supported. There was a story that it was a dad that told, and I don't remember all the little details, but similar to that with the car seat. And what he realized was, when he stopped and said, hey, we're going for a ride in the car now. I know you don't like going in the car seat, but this is the only way we can get to the birthday party. And it's a law that I have to put you in the car seat, and I do it for your protection. And when he actually took a few minutes to explain to the child in a language that the child could understand as to what was going to happen, instead of just the fighting, like just pulling it out and they're pulling it, and explained it, he never had a problem after that. Right. And a lot of times, and there may be, whether there is some, you know, there was some sort of incident in that child's life where they were held against their will that could have stimulated that. And maybe the mother doesn't even know that there was an uncle or some other person in that kid's life who restrained them and hurt them. And so they may not even in their young minds be able to make the association, but that's the way their body revolts against that and any kind of restraint. So there's so many things that can happen that are trauma, whether it's a physical injury, a bad physical injury, a mild physical injury. I mean, I have this, and it's not really a trauma anymore, but it was for a long time. I didn't trust my father because I fell and I cut my head open. I had to go to the emergency room to get stitches. And he said, they may have to, you know, sew you up and all that, but I'll be there with you the whole time. I'll be there with you. I'm not going to leave you alone. Everything's going to be okay. And they made him leave. You know how hospitals are. They made him leave. But I didn't know they made him leave. I was 3 years old or 2 years old. That was a little bitty thing. I didn't know that. I thought my father left me left me with these strangers. And that's how I felt. So it was very unnerving for me as a small child to deal with that. And later, as I know now, you know, that hospitals suck at really nourishing little children and giving them their parent and giving them their blankie or their teddy bear or whatever they need for their comfort. I now know that, and I don't blame my father, but the little girl in me felt violated and felt abandoned, right? Because I didn't know better. And a lot of us may have some of these situations that happened that as an adult, we look back on and go, well, that was kind of little and silly and nothing. But as that small child trying to make sense of it, it wasn't nothing. It was huge. And it's in there. So I've set the stage for Kimberly. Thank you for being here. I want to introduce you guys to Kimberly Ward. She is one of our certified nutritional endocrinology practitioners. And she's also certified or about to become certified, I don't remember, in Laura Fine's work in the transpersonal energy healing. She's also a co-teacher with Laura in some of the programs in that. And she is a trauma healer. She has been trained by Stephen Levine, right, in trauma healing. She's been a health coach for like 25 years. And she's very much into this mind, body, spirit, energetic connection with health. So I'm going to let her tell you anything more she feels like you need to know about her. And then we're going to talk about childhood traumas and talk about that ACEs study and how some of those things, awareness of some of those things might help you in the physical health issues that you might be experiencing now. So Kimberly, thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm so sorry I'm late. I was at my office and I didn't bring my charger for my computer and it went dead. So I'm like driving home as fast as I can so I can get here. But I'm so excited to be here and share. This is the information that I think that I am most passionate about in the world. I've been a healthcare practitioner for 28 years and I've done a lot of different things. But the last few years I have specialized in working with people that have a trauma history, and that could be early childhood trauma, that could be a traumatic event later in life, but it really doesn't matter the source of the trauma in general, because the body's going to respond very similarly to all types of trauma. But when we have trauma disrupting us when we're very young, it really sets the stage for poor health as we age. I'm sure Dr. Rita Marie went over this a little bit. So I really like to educate people on the how and the why of the nervous system, because the nervous system health, I think, really is the basis for the rest of the systems in the body. And for young children that are dealing with adversity, stress, or trauma, or neglect, they didn't get the nervous system, didn't get developed in a way that allows for health and healing later on in life. So it's a really important thing to understand. And many, what I have found, the reason that I specialize in trauma now, is that many people work very, very hard on healing their gut and healing their hormones and trying to balance their health. And doing all the right things is often not enough because they're not getting to the root of the dysregulated nervous system. So we can take all these actions for proper health. And if you're not getting better with all of those good things that we're doing here at the ERC and all the other programs that Dr. Rita Marie provides us, if we're not getting better, then I suggest that people look a little bit deeper into how their nervous system is wired and how our nervous system is wired really gets decided when we're very young. We can change that, though. We can certainly work on that as adults. And that's really what I'm passionate about, is helping people do that. So I have the, do I have the ability to share my screen?
You sure do. Just hit the little green button at the bottom.
Okay. So let me pull up my proper presentation here. Is there any questions I can answer before I move forward?
If you have them, just open up your line and just shoot it out.
All right.
Donna.
So there's certain things that as kids we remember, but there's probably, you know, way more things that we don't remember. Is there a way to figure those out or find those out?
Like, I think that's a great question.
I'm not sure who I'm.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I have the wrong screen. Let's see here. That's a really good question, Donna. It's part of what I work with when I'm working with a client, is to help them become more aware of what's causing a disruption in their system. And sometimes we need to learn to be more aware. And I believe that if we learn some techniques and tools with a trained therapist, that when we go through the process of awareness or looking at what's happening, whatever needs to come to the surface for us to remember will. I really trust the body, and I trust that if in the right environment with an appropriate trained person to help, and I'm going to teach you what this word means, but the word is co-regulate. If you have somebody that you can co-regulate your nervous system with in a safe environment, if a memory is important for your healing, it will show up in a safe environment. If it doesn't show up, then it wasn't necessary. So that's kind of what I think about.
So it sounds to me like what you're saying is you can clear the energetic imprint, the nervous system trauma out of the system without having to actually go through the sometimes painful act of
Exactly. And I'm going to actually describe that in a little further detail a little bit later.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, so we're going to start off talking about ACEs. A-C-E-S stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. Of course, we always do our medical disclaimer. Did you do a medical disclaimer, Rita Marie, already? Or okay. So this is very familiar to all of you, I'm sure, that the information here is not intended to replace a relationship with your qualified healthcare provider. It's not medical advice. It's just a sharing of our knowledge, and we encourage you to make your own healthcare decisions. So I want to define ACEs for you. Some of you are probably very familiar with that, but I think it's important to have an understanding of what we're talking about exactly with the ACEs study, because with this study, we can actually prove, all of us are like, duh, we know that, right? But prove that issues in childhood can cause disease later in life, right? How that happens. We'll talk the physiology of how that happens, but most importantly, the fact that we can build resiliency in the system to help us heal the disruption from the past that is causing the current illness. Okay. So adverse childhood experiences comes from a Kaiser Permanente study that was at the time thought of as a groundbreaking public health study. It just shows us that childhood trauma actually does, in fact, lead to the adult onset of chronic diseases, physical diseases, as well as mental illness, depression, violence, or being the victim of violence. Addiction is a part of this also. And this actually was a study first done by doctors who were working with obese clients that were trying to lose weight. And what happened was that so many of the obese clients had a trauma history, a sexual, early childhood sexual abuse history, actually. And so the doctors were so fascinated by this pattern that they saw that they went into this study. And the study was done actually in Southern California, I believe the first one was done there, on upper middle class people with health insurance, right? So these are not people that you would necessarily expect to have a lot of adversity in their life or a lot of trauma in their life. But what the study found was that there were lots of people actually in the world that are dealing with ACEs. The original study was a very small survey. There's been hundreds of studies since with more questions and more things that they looked at. But there's 10 basic areas which measured the following things when they were doing their first study. Okay, physical, sexual, and verbal abuse, physical and emotional neglect, whether a family member in their immediate environment had depression or was diagnosed with any other mental illness, if there was any kind of addiction or substance abuse in the home, or if they had a parent that was, or a family member that was in prison, if they witnessed a mother being abused or a mother figure being abused, or if they've lost a parent to separation, divorce, or other reasons, including being in prison. So you can have a score actually of 0 to 10. Each type of trauma is just one question, and it counts as 1 point if you have that issue in your life. So you'll have a score of 1 to 10, or 0 to 10. If you're lucky, you have 0. The 5 main discoveries I want to quickly review in the very beginning when they did this test. Again, they've done lots of tests since that all correlate with the same findings, but they've done tests that go into other kinds of traumas as well. But the significance of the first test are that ACEs are very common. Nearly 2/3 of adults have at least one. And remember, this is like upper middle class people with insurance and money, right? These are not really poor people that have a lot of challenges. This is real. Well, everyone has challenges, right? But this is not an expected population to have nearly 2/3 have at least one ACE. ACEs can be the cause of these adult onset diseases. Typically what we see is a lot of chronic disease, autoimmune disease, cancer. ACEs don't occur alone. If you have one, there's an 87% chance that you're going to have two or more. And the more ACEs that you have, the greater your risk of adult onset disease, mental illness, violence, and being a victim of violence. So some specifics here. People with an ACE score of 4 are twice as likely to be smokers and 7 times more likely to be alcoholic. Having an ACE score of 4 increases the risk of emphysema or chronic bronchitis by nearly 400% and suicide by 1,200%. People with an ACE score are more like, high ACE scores are more likely to be violent and to have more marriages, more broken bones, more drug prescriptions, more depression, and more autoimmune disease. And people with an ACE score of 6 or higher are at a risk of their lifespan being shortened by 20 years. Yeah, so clearly it's pretty significant. The fifth finding is that ACEs are responsible for a big chunk of workplace absenteeism and for costs in healthcare, emergency response, mental health, and criminal justice. So childhood adversity contributes to actually the most of the cost of chronic health, mental health, economic health, and social health issues. Everyone is susceptible to the physical and emotional damage of stress and trauma, especially if it happens at an early age, because your system then gets wired into trauma patterns, but not everyone with ACEs gets sick. Some of my favorite resources for this topic is Donna Jackson Nakazawa. She wrote a book called Childhood Disrupted, How Your Biography Becomes Your Biology and How You Can Heal. And I love this quote from her because it sums it up really nicely, that when we as children encounter sudden or chronic adversity, excessive stress hormones cause powerful changes in the body, altering our chemistry. And the developing immune system and brain react to the chemical barrage by permanently resetting our stress response to high, which in turn can have a devastating impact on our mental and physical health. So we look at that, right? She uses the word permanently, and that's true if you don't know how to shift and change the state of the nervous system. But the good news is we can. We can build resilience and shift and change out of those patterns that we learn as kids. But there are a few other factors besides just the actual physical environment that we're in that causes the stress in the first place as children. There's also the possibility of inherited family trauma disrupting our system before we even come into the world, before we're even born. It's possible that our parents and grandparents' stress in their life causes epigenetic changes in their DNA, which can be passed on to us. So we can be born into stress patterns, regardless of the environment that we're born into. Studies actually show, we know for sure in humans, that it can go down to grandchildren. So quite a few generations there, we've shown in the grandchildren of Holocaust survivors that there's epigenetic changes in these grandchildren. And in mice or in worms that they show 14 generations of epigenetic changes. So we know that it's very likely that we are dealing with inherited trauma from our parents and great-grandparents and great-grandparents, et cetera. There's a book here I've listed by Mark Wolin, talks about inherited family trauma, if you're interested in that. And one of my new favorite books is called The Orchid and the Dandelion, Why Some Children Struggle, But How All Can Thrive. This is Dr. Thomas Boyce. And he calls children either dandelion children or orchid children, because some of us are just born more like dandelions, right? Dandelions can grow anywhere. They're totally resilient, right? We can see them growing in beautiful gardens, but we also see them growing in the concrete cracks in downtown areas, right? They're very resilient. And dandelion kids tend to have very average health outcomes. Not horribly poor, but not horribly excellent either. Not terribly excellent. So they're really average health-wise, but orchids. Now, orchids require a lot more nourishing and nurturing environments to thrive, right? So orchid children are very, very sensitive. And these kids either, because of their nature, just their inherited nature, their physiology, they are either going to have the best outcomes health-wise because of their nurturing environment, or unfortunately, they're going to have the worst outcomes because of an environment with lots of ACEs, okay, lots of adverse childhood experiences. So these are just some factors to think about when we're thinking about our own childhood and about those of people that we love. There's not just the experience in our environment, but it's also what we're inherited, what we bring into our environment, and also just our nature. Are we more dandelion or are we more orchid? And so those are some fun things to think about, and those books are fantastic resources if you're interested in learning more. But we all know a little bit about the normal stress cycle. I'm going to just touch the surface of this. So through Dr. Rita Marie's program, which now I'm so happy to say I am certified in her program, and we learned so much about this. And I think it is one of the most important things to understand about healing, is that for us to be in a place where our body can do what it's meant to do and it's designed to do, we really need to be in a peaceful, calm, parasympathetic state. Really, it's so much about the nervous system, right? We start with the autonomic nervous system that's designed to sense danger or safety. Your nervous system is sending out signals and picking up signals from the environment all the time, 24/7. It never stops, even when you're sleeping. It's picking up signals of danger or safety. Always. It's always on. We can't turn it off. The neurotransmitter adrenaline is quickly released as soon as your system recognizes some sort of threat or danger, whether that's a saber-toothed tiger or a father that maybe drinks too much and came home drunk, or a mother that's has anxiety herself. So your system is picking up on all of the signals in the environment, and if it picks up danger, then the sympathetic nervous system kicks in first with the very quick acting neurotransmitters. And then eventually, if it's not resolved quickly, if the danger is not resolved quickly, then we have other hormones that are longer acting that are secreted to support the body to go into fight or flight. So everyone has heard of cortisol, and that's secreted through something called the HPAT axis. That's the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid axis. It helps us to mobilize into action. It helps us to do something, either to fight or to run. And then hopefully at that point, the body then has resolution of the stress. We're either able to fight it off or to run away. We have some resolution, and then the body shifts gears very naturally into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is rest and digest, right? So there's this charge-discharge cycle. Our nervous system senses a threat. Our body automatically takes over with neurotransmitters or hormones that give us the ability. It changes our physiology so we can fight or run. And then we have resolution. So we get charged up to take action. We have resolution, and then we can discharge. The parasympathetic system kicks in, and we can rest and digest and recover from the stress. So that's in a perfect world. We have this. So remember, the autonomic nervous system is always first and foremost focused on safety and connection with somebody else, safe connection. And it responds to the threat by changing our physiology, right? It creates sensations and hormonal fluctuations so we can take action. We can either fight, we can run. If we don't have resolution, then we're going to freeze. People with childhood stress or trauma have nervous systems that are stuck in defense. So they typically are most of the time in fight or flight or freeze, all right, which doesn't allow for healing, right? It doesn't allow for resolution of problems in the system. So there's this natural charge and discharge that happens every day, all day. We have inhaling and exhaling, right? We're charged up. Inhale is a sympathetic. Exhale is parasympathetic. We have eating and elimination. We have working, we have sleeping. Many activities can either be charging or discharging or both, depending on the circumstances and the intention. But constantly our nervous system is charging up and discharging. When the balance is upset, we can become undercharged or overcharged. And as kids, we naturally charge and discharge in some circumstances, but as kids, we need our caregivers to help us to regulate the charge. We don't know how to deal with a lot of intense stress when we're kids. Our parents literally have to regulate our system when we're first born Then as we get a little bit older, we co-regulate with a parent or a caregiver. And then we can learn how to regulate our system on our own. So if you didn't have a parent that was loving, if you had a lot of neglect in your family and you didn't have this natural co-regulation and support for your nervous system, you often grow up with a very dysregulated system stuck in fight, flight, or freeze. Okay. I love this visual of charge discharge, right? This could be a threat or something positive because there's good stress, there's good charge as well as negative charge. And the body responds in the same way. There's a threat or an issue and the nervous system kicks in sympathetic, right? We get these hormones and neurotransmitters that change our physiology to give us the ability to resolve the problem. And then we get resolution and we move down into this nice parasympathetic rest and digest, right? But what happens to kids if there's no resolution or there's no help from an adult, if there's no secure attachment, there's no safety, then the charge comes in and instead of hitting the peak of resolution, we get overwhelmed. There's no one there to help us or the person that's supposed to help us is the one causing the danger or the trauma. So then we slide that back into some of us get stuck in sympathetic fight or flight. Anxious, highly charged. Some of us actually move into freeze. This is overwhelm. This is a trauma response. One definition of trauma is overwhelm, where the system no longer can take action. The only thing the system can do is freeze, faint, play dead. So again, children will get stuck in one or the other, and many of them, many children of childhood trauma, have both. That they shift between constant anxiety or depression. So they're fluctuating between the two. Sometimes they're diagnosed as bipolar when it in fact is trauma and not a bipolar issue. So developmental and childhood trauma, again, human babies cannot regulate their own nervous system when they're first born. They must have mom or other caregivers, mom and dad, to help them calm down when they feel charged up. We depend on our parents and caregivers to regulate our system for us in the beginning. Then we have co-regulation where we feel a little independent, but we still need mom and dad so that we can then eventually learn how to regulate our own system. Now, if this is missing in childhood, again, it has the same effect as other ACEs. So if you didn't have a lot of nurturing and safe attachment, you would still have ACEs symptoms, even if there was no actual bad event, right? Because the lack of connection and lack of regulation with a healthy regulated nervous system. So if your parents didn't have regulated nervous systems, they couldn't help you regulate your nervous system either, right? So this depends on healthy adults that can regulate our nervous system as kids, teach us how to learn to regulate our own nervous system, and then feel safe in healthy connection with other people as well, right? Co-regulation, meaning having a safe person to regulate your system with, is a biological imperative. That means everyone needs it to sustain life. It doesn't matter how old you are. We all need connection and community, right? You guys ever read any of those Blue Zone things where they talk about, oh, all those people that live to an old age, what is one common denominator is community and connection, right? It's a biological imperative. It's through this reciprocal regulation of our nervous systems that we feel safe to be in connection with others, which creates a more resilient system, which means that we're healthier. We can heal faster and we can stay healthier longer, emotionally, mentally, and physically healthy. Co-regulation is imperative. So even if you didn't have an alcoholic parent or big trauma or sexual abuse, if you didn't have a healthy, safe parent with a nervous system that was co-regulating with yours, you are set up for adult onset diseases. One of the things I really want people to understand is called autonomic nervous system poise. When we're children, we should be learning how to be able to move flexibly between the states, between the sympathetic take action dominant state to the parasympathetic rest and digest, right? It's all about balance. And when we grow up in a healthy environment, then we have this resiliency. We're able to tolerate uncomfortable things and uncomfortable sensations in the system. And we're able to also take action. And then we're able to relax when we know we're safe and feel safe in connection with others. We want to be able to regulate our system back to calm, but also take action when needed, and then come back to calm, rest and digest, right? And we want to be able to have healthy interaction with others. Kids that had disruption in their normal development have trouble with this, right? The thing is that safety is always first. Our autonomic energy moves in patterns of defense and protection all the time. And this is not a cognitive thinking process. This happens below the level of conscious awareness. And the thing is that the autonomic nervous system makes no judgments. There is no good or bad. There is only safe or unsafe, right? The tiger is chasing me. That's not safe. Dad comes home and he's mad. That's not safe. No one's home when I get home from school and I'm scared. It's not safe, right? It's not good or bad. It just is. It's safe or it's not safe. It happens mostly under our awareness, kind of subconsciously. So the nervous system is managing risk, and it creates pattern of connection by changing and adjusting our physiological state, right? So again, this is just pointing back to, this is a very physiological thing. The nervous system first is deciding, am I safe or not? Then we can worry about physiology. What are we going to do about it? If it's not safe, we're not worried about digestion. We're not worried about reproduction. We're not worried about relaxing, and right? We're worried about safety. Are we safe? That is first and foremost. So our system is going to physiologically change based on, not our cognitive thinking, based on what our nervous system is deciding. Is it safe or is it not safe? So people that grew up with neglect or with a lot of adversity have systems that are stuck in either the sympathetic fight or flight or freeze, the parasympathetic freeze. They have a very difficult time regulating their system. They never gained the ability to be flexible between the states. Like, they didn't learn how to have poise because they didn't get good co-regulation. Okay. They can be stuck in this sympathetic dominance or parasympathetic dominance. They can't easily activate defenses in risky or dangerous situations. They have a really hard time reacting appropriately to dangerous situations. A lot of that is because they don't have very good boundaries. But if there's abuse or neglect, we don't learn healthy boundaries. We have trouble relaxing in safe environments because you're kind of on hyper alert that it's dangerous out there in the world. It's difficult for them to establish and maintain safe and healthy relationships typically. Often they react disproportionately to events that are happening in the present time because their nervous system is very much stuck in the past. In that past situation, when it was dangerous, the nervous system is still wired to respond as if everything is a threat. So anything in the present moment that remotely reminds the nervous system, not the conscious brain, but remotely reminds the nervous system that this, ooh, we've seen this before. This seems like the past. It's going to put the system into overdrive, and they're going to overreact disproportionately to what's actually happening in the present moment. And they have physical, emotional, and mental symptoms due to this constant and chronic dysregulation of this hormonal axis. Okay, so which means they get sick very easily and they don't heal very easily. Okay. So again, anybody that's interested, it's literally the HPAT axis dysregulation that's the physiology here. It starts with the autonomic nervous system, which then decides that we're in danger or we're safe. If we're in danger, the hypothalamus kicks in. All of these neurotransmitters and hormones start to get released. The pituitary is involved, the adrenal is involved, eventually the thyroid's involved. There's so many things happening here, there's a lot to do with the neurotransmitters and the hormones, but also the circadian rhythm. So when and how we're releasing these hormones of stress and the hormones of calm as well gets so totally disrupted. The main player here as far as the nervous system and the autonomic nervous system, we talk about the vagus nerve. I don't know if anybody's interested in me going into any more detail on this, but I can. The most important thing to understand is the vagus nerve wanders throughout all of the organs in the system, all the gut and all the major organs, and it's bidirectional. So we're getting information from externally from the world, and our brain takes that information in and sends it down to the body through the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve takes information from what's happening in our body and brings it back up to the brain for us to interpret. So this is a bidirectional thing. It's what's interesting to me is that there's more neurons coming from our internal organs through the vagus nerve up into our brain than there is from our brain down into our gut, which says to me that it's more important. Our internal experience is more important than our external experience, right? A lot of the severity of stress is dependent on our perception of stress. So if we are perceiving an event as stressful, our body is going to activate the stress response, right? Internally, our emotions, Our experience externally is important, but how we interpret that and how we perceive that affects our mental and our emotional health, which then changes our physiology from the inside, right? And so the vagus nerve is a major player in here. It regulates digestion. It's a major important component in the gut-brain connection and very important in trauma because when we're traumatized, the external event is going to be perceived by us as a threat. All of these hormones and shifts are going to happen to give us the physiology to take action. It takes energy away from our organs, right? So our gut health is greatly affected by stress and trauma that's not regulated. So Rita Marie, do you want to add anything on that vagus nerve there? I can talk a little more about the polyvagal theory if people are interested.
Just to say that it's just so critical. And over time, and when we have these ACEs and we have traumas and we have stress, we're toning down that vagus nerve. And when the tone of the vagus nerve is low, that means that we can have gut issues and we can have breathing issues and we can have heart issues. And we're in that stress state more often because we don't know how to regulate and bring it down. So it's really great. And there's this thing called the polyvagal theory these days. And I've listened to one book and I just downloaded a couple more books to listen to when I exercise on the polyvagal theory. But the idea that the vagus, the ventral part, the front part of the vagus is that part that needs, you know, we are supporting our vagus when we're into these nurturing, loving, connected, like Kimberly said right at the beginning, connection being so important. And I believe that, you know, part of the value of us having this community is connection, and it helps us with our vagus nerve. And there's all kinds of other things we'll talk about at other times about stimulating the vagus nerve. But it's just so important to know that and to also be kind to yourself when you're like, oh, I'm not just getting better. And why am I not getting better? And that there's this programming that needs to be reprogrammed.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's great. I love that you're learning more about the polyvagal theory. It's just fascinating to me. One of my favorite resources is called the polyvagal theory in therapy. And Deb Dana is the author, and she says the polyvagal theory is the science of feeling safe enough to fall in love with life and take the risks of living. And people with childhood trauma or ACEs have a really, really hard time with this, right? And we can say the physiology of that is a lot due to the vagus nerve and how the vagus nerve and the nervous system were set in trauma patterns at such an early age that they never learn to feel safe in life. They can't fall in love with life and they can't take the risks of living because they were wired in trauma patterns. And the way this happens, the physiology of this in the in the polyvagal theory is that there's three pathways that are activated by stress. Again, this is not with your cognitive thinking brain. This is your system is sensing stress in the environment, okay? And the social engagement system is the first part or one of the pathways that can be activated by stress. And this is part of the vagus that's called the ventral vagal complex, right? And this is actually the parasympathetic part of our nervous system. This is where we want to be most of the time. We feel safe. We feel connected, orientated to the environment. We're calm, but very alert. And if we are threatened in this place and we can't solve the problem, then we're going to trigger another part of our system, which is called the sympathetic system, the fight or flight, right? This is where we're going to have the energy to take action. Right, we're going to have the energy, the physiology to give us the ability to mobilize either towards danger and fight it or away from danger. And if we're in fight or flight and we can't resolve the threat, now we move into what we call trauma, overwhelm. We don't have help or we can't fix it ourselves. We shift into freeze. Now, this is also part of the vasal complex, the dorsal vagal complex. This is a parasympathetic as well, but this is not calm, safe, loving social engagement. This is freeze, faint, immobilized, collapse. It's dramatic. It looks very calm on the outside, but it's very active, actually, physiologically. It's a very active state internally. It's healing can't happen in this state. Right? Healing happens in social engagement. Healing doesn't happen in sympathetic or freeze. Right? But these are the responses that the body is responding to based on a threat. So this is a great visual. I love the visual. So this is a great one. We call this the autonomic ladder, right? We want to be at the top of the ladder here, where we're in this state of connection, where we feel safe. We have social people around us that are safe, that help us feel safe, help us to co-regulate, where we can help each other in a healthy way. This is the ventral vagal parasympathetic state. If we get stressed, something happens, we move into protection. We're either in connection or protection, right? And again, healthy people have resilience and they can move between the two appropriately. But when we're traumatized at an early age, we often don't have that resiliency and we get stuck either in the sympathetic fight or flight or the dorsal vagal, the immobilization free state. And again, some people are fluctuating between the two. It's exhausting. Talk about adrenal fatigue. It's incredibly exhausting and it prohibits healing. So this is what I like to keep in mind with my clients that are doing everything right. Right? And they're still not getting better. We need to look at the state of their nervous system. Going back to what state are they in? I work with many of you have seen some of my other presentations, and I work with a four-state model of the nervous system, and state zero is where we want to be, right? Calm, collected, coherence. This is a state of coherence where our systems are working together in harmony. If we get shoved out of state zero because of stress, a healthy person that has resiliency in their nervous system can deal with it, can take action and deal with it, and come back to state zero. If we don't have help, if we're overwhelmed, we go to state three. Unfortunately, people can be stuck in those two states for many, many years. And as the years go by, your health will deteriorate.
And just to add the thing about state zero and that coherence is the terminology that HeartMath uses. Mm. So there are techniques, HeartMath and other types of techniques that are designed to take you from one of those other higher states, the higher nervous system arousal states, down to zero. And it takes practice. It's not something that you do once, you learn it, you read it, now you do it. It literally took me 3 years of having a toddler to really learn how to do a HeartMath and really shift my state. So don't be hard on yourselves. If you've been trying to meditate and trying HeartMath and doing all these things and it's not working, it's really a matter, because it is a matter of reprogramming, as Kimberly said, reprogramming that nervous system, and it doesn't happen overnight.
And this would be the ideal situation if we could have had mothers that we're in a state of coherence all the time, right? And could teach our system how to be in a state of coherence, we'd have a sense of what that was. For those kids that grew up with a lot of stress, their parents often had a lot of stress and couldn't be in a state of coherence for their children. So you didn't have an example of coherence. You didn't have an example of a regulated system. You didn't have safe people to regulate with, right? So that makes it very difficult then for us as adults to rewire the old patterning, because again, the nervous system is not about our cognitive thinking brain. It's simply about safety and danger. And so if we didn't have that coherent state as kids, life is dangerous.
Yes.
Everything about life is dangerous. And so we're stuck in this. And I'd like to bring this down a little bit deeper to what happens when we have all of these experiences as kids that keep us stuck in fight or flight or freeze, is that the nervous system is shaped through our experiences and also our perceptions. Okay. So it's after our system picks up on cues that it might be dangerous, that our humanness kicks in, it starts to make meaning of the cues, and we start to create stories that shape our life, right? We experience the state in our nervous system and the corresponding sensations before we experience thinking in our brain, before we can feel the emotions, before we create the story. So often the stories that we create around what's happening to us. And remember, when we're kids, we're creating a story based on an immature, unregulated system that doesn't know anything about life yet, right? So we start making up stories about why this is happening. And these stories often live in our subconscious mind. So as we work through trauma as adults, often we don't even know what these stories are that we're telling ourselves. Sometimes we know that inner critic comes up and we have these negative limited thinking, but often a lot, this is right below the surface. And these stories really can limit our healing and our happiness greatly, right? So for instance, a child has grown up in a home with no money. There's financial stress all the time and the parents are fighting. Well, the little child starts to internalize the stress of the fighting to say, oh, it must be me. It's my fault. I'm bad, right? So they start telling themselves stories to kind of make sense of what's happening around them, because that's what the higher thinking human brain wants, to make sense of what's happening around us, right? And to make meaning of it. So part of the problem with adults that had childhood trauma or childhood adversity is that we have conscious or subconscious, very often subconscious stories that are no longer current in the present moment, but our physiology is responding to our story. Our physiology is responding to the emotion that we never got to completely resolve as a child when we were in the situation, right? So we get into these particular patterns. I call them defensive stress patterns. As young kids, our experiences and our perceptions change or shape our nervous system, and our thoughts and our emotions and our behaviors become habits that are wired into the nervous system, literally hardwired into the system. And it feels impossible sometimes to change because they're so hardwired in. And they're hardwired in as survival patterns, right? They're defensive patterns that helped you survive a challenging situation when you were a child, but they're so hardwired now that even though they're not useful, it feels often impossible to change. But these were patterns that were useful, but they're just not any longer useful. So learning about your own defensive patterns, I think, is a crucial part of healing. And actually, Laura and I teach in another section of INE, we teach this in a class called Dancing with Defenses, which is a beautiful thing to learn about and really was life-changing for me. And it changed my practice a lot. It really helped me with my trauma clients more. When you understand that you are reacting as a defense based in your childhood adversity, your childhood experiences, you can then start to unwind the old pattern and to start to create something better and healthier for you. So what determines our resiliency? Because the truth is, even though we're hardwired into these old patterns that aren't helpful, we can build resiliency in the system and we can rewire. But we want to think about what got us here, right? Our perception of the life events and the stories we tell ourselves are really big. Working with that is, I found, one of the most important pieces of healing is to be able to understand what you perceive to be true, whether it was true or not doesn't matter, the story you told yourself and how your nervous system is managing that. But we also have to take into effect our gut health, our diet, our exercise, our environment, toxic load, toxic people. We want to think about the genetics or inherited trauma could be a factor here in our resiliency as well, and how much support and community we have, how much social engagement. So when we're working to rebuild our system, these are the things that we're going to have to work on. Many people don't realize that the disruption started as a child. And that nervous system disruption affected the HPAT axis. All of those hormones and neurotransmitters dysregulated other systems in the body, creating illness. And so, again, many people then work so hard on diet and exercise and detoxing and all of these things without going back to the root of the disruption in the first place. Not everybody has childhood trauma. People with childhood trauma don't always get sick. And it really depends on our ability to have the resiliency and shift between the different states of the nervous system on purpose and be able to allow the experience and the charge of something like an emotion to come up and allow it to discharge naturally. When we get stuck in fight or flight or freeze, or we hold on to an emotion and don't let it naturally discharge, our physiology changes. It gets us stuck in an unhealthy pattern that prevents healing. So I'm almost done. Let me just go through my main takeaway points here, is that adverse childhood experiences and developmental trauma disrupt health drastically and can lead to serious adult diseases. The negative effects of ACEs and developmental trauma is only a long-term problem if it's not resolved or if resiliency is not built in the system. So you're not doomed just because you had adverse experiences as a child, because we can learn to build resilience in the system. But unresolved trauma will dysregulate the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, affecting the hormones and neurotransmitters of that HPAT axis, which then can lead to the eventual dysfunction actually of all of the organs and systems of the body. Stories and emotions created from stress in childhood shape our nervous system and how we think, how we feel, and how we behave. The good news is that we can reshape our nervous system with new experience. Another reason why it's so important to have community, and why that this, like the programs that Rita Marie offers, are so important, because we have each other. We have community where we can work together on some of these issues. We can discharge some of our stress with each other. We can verbally discharge. We can share. We can have co-regulation with other people in the group and with the leaders in the group to help you to reshape the old patterns that aren't serving you anymore. So instead of getting stuck and staying stuck in these old patterns, we want to look for ways to build resiliency in the system, and we can absolutely reshape your nervous system. But it takes experience. It takes time. It takes experience. It takes practice. And often it takes somebody that will regulate with you. And if you don't have somebody in your life that's healthy, that can give you healthy connection and regulate with you, you need to go find it. You need to go find that. But the good news is, you're resilient. The body has the capacity to heal. If our nervous system is stuck in a trauma pattern, it can't heal. But we can undo the trauma pattern, and miracles really happen. All right. I'm going to stop my share and open it up for any questions.
There you go. I have a couple of questions. I think Angelica asked one earlier and I copied it. But from the standpoint, if you could review, you started out at the beginning with the aces, right? And the different numbers, and everybody did their aces. Could you do a little review of what the different levels mean? Like if you had a 0 to 1, if you had a 9 to 10, what that could mean in your
right. So the simple answer is that the higher your score, the higher your likelihood of disease and shortened life. The higher your likelihood of having violence in your life or being a victim of violence. The higher your likelihood of addiction, the higher your likelihood of autoimmune disease, the higher your likelihood of cardiovascular disease, metabolic disorders like diabetes. So it's really just a way to have a sense on a scale of 1 to 10, kind of where do you fall? Again, the number isn't a definite. It's an idea compared to other people that have that many aces. We know that the more you have, the higher your risk. What I think is important about the aces to know is that the truth is the trauma itself, the experience itself wasn't the problem. It's not what happened. It's how we responded and how our system got wired into a pattern. Somebody's not sure where that's coming from.
I'm looking.
Okay. So the number itself doesn't matter. And I like to tell people not to panic if they have a high ACE score. It's just information. It's information to help us understand that we are at a higher risk, but that doesn't mean that we can't recover and heal.
Right. So are there any things and like a couple of like techniques or things that you can share with people to help them, you know, especially those folks who already have that, call them the hypervigilance, right? They already have those high scores and it tends to propagate into, okay, I saw the score, now I'm going to freak out more. Already have an overstimulated sympathetic nervous system. Mm-hmm. And are there strategies that you know, something you could share that people could just start to do to take control?
Yes, my first strategy is to stop and recognize what your system is doing, right? So slow down and watch yourself. Are you in anxious, I got to take action, I got to do something mode? That's a sympathetic dominant state, right? In that state, you can have higher blood pressure. You can have a lot of anxiety and discomfort in the system. Or are you more frozen? Are you more in that state where you're overwhelmed, where you're frozen, you're tired, you're sleepy, you're depressed, you don't want to do anything, you're finding excuses to not take action, right? What's happening? Am I in dominant sympathetic or am I in parasympathetic? And one of the fastest ways to shift your system, it might not be a permanent solution, right? Because there's a difference between management and resolution. In the moment as we're trying to manage anxiety or overwhelm, breath is one of the most useful tools,
yeah.
Right? So if we're in an anxious state, we want to exhale longer, okay? Because an inhale is going to be sympathetic, energy building. Exhale is going to be parasympathetic and relaxing. So if you notice your state is anxious and active, as in sympathetic, then you want to slow down your exhale. If you notice that you're exhausted and you need more energy, if you're finding yourself being procrastinating or overwhelmed and just want to hide in a hole and not do anything, then you need to boost your energy. You need to come up out of freeze. So then we could do more rapid inhale, more full inhale breath. So breath is number one. First of all, recognize what state are you in.
That's a biggie.
Right? Notice what you're doing. Don't judge it. Just notice. And then you can use your breath to either boost your energy or calm you down, depending on the state of your system. And then another thing is change your posture. Because the way that we hold our physical being is going to affect how our charge or life force moves through us or doesn't move through us. So often when we're overwhelmed, we're collapsed, right? So if you're not able to
sit down and meditate or call a therapist or call your best friend and get some help and you have to function, then after recognizing your state, changing your breathing, change your posture, right? Pull up, spine straight, whether you're sitting or standing, so your life force can come alive and move so that you can be more in charge of your life force, right? Mm-hmm. If you're frozen and you need to get some energy going, do some deeper breathing. And you can also stomp your feet so you get a little more grounded. Often we're disconnected from our body when we're overwhelmed or when we're stressed. So we can stomp our feet. You can just pat yourself down a little bit. If you're in public, I like to just do this a little bit or pat my knees, just pat down gently. It doesn't have to be a big obnoxious movement, but bring awareness back into your body. Feel solid and grounded in your body. Pull your posture up. Work on your breathing. So those are some things that you can do to manage the moment, right? So management is different from resolution, though.
Yeah. I like what you just said about that. And another thing that is just if you're feeling anxious in public and you don't want people to see you doing anything, just tapping the tips of your fingers. That's where a lot of the acupuncture meridians go through. Mm-hmm. And you can actually resolve some things. So you just kind of tap the tips of your fingers together as well.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And remember that if your body is sensing stress and you're overwhelmed or frozen, another thing you could do is kind of go below the surface to what's the story I'm telling myself.
I like that.
What story am I telling myself? And I actually use the tapping on my fingers technique when I'm thinking of a new story. So I'm often, I'm safe. This is safe. I can do this, right? So I'm often rewiring a new story with the movement. So you can do it with your fingers. This is an easy one in public, right? Like if I'm going to go on stage and I'm a little bit nervous about presenting, I can easily do this with my mantra. I am safe. I got this. I can do this. I got, you know, and that thought with the movement and the tapping in the body is very powerful. That's, I often am doing opposite and alternating movements with the body in as well as at the same time as the new story, right? So I am safe. I am good enough. Mm-hmm. I am strong. I am healthy. I have energy. I'm telling myself a new story as I'm tapping the body. Walking is another good way to rewire that new story in because we're working with the opposite side of the body. We're working on the, you know, the different parts of the brain. And so cross the body is also really useful. So if you're feeling overwhelmed, whether it's anxious and hot, I call it hot symptoms of anxiety or sympathetic, or if it's cold symptoms, frozen, depressed, parasympathetic, freeze, assess it. Where are you? Are you anxious? Are you frozen? Where are you at? You can use your breath accordingly based on your symptom or the state in your system. You can change your posture and you can tell yourself a different story. That'll help you get through the moment. And then working with somebody that you feel safe with so that you can create a safe connection and learn to co-regulate is probably the most important part of rewiring long-term, right? When you're working on healing long-term.
Awesome. Thank you. And Angelica said, I noticed that after I get emotionally stressed, I get some kind of hangover, get very tired for a few days. And it doesn't have to be a big event. It usually just my system is stressed and not poised for an extended period of time. Does this actually change cortisol and the circadian rhythm?
So the event itself or just the fact that after
the hangover, it doesn't have to be a big event. It's just my system stress not poised for an extended period of time. Like she'll feel it for several days after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's very common, especially if you're new to learning to process with awareness, right? When we start to use our awareness and work through the old patterns with awareness, it changes our physiology. You likely are not changing the emotion and the energy, but your body is letting go and you probably have some, like some detox symptoms, right? Like you are literally changing your physiology just by changing your perception of the reality and the situation. So as you're processing and working through old stuff, the energy will shift. Your cells are going to respond to the environment of your emotions and your energy. You're going to have that. Now, it's kind of like exercising. When you first start exercising, it hurts sometimes, right? You have a couple days of lactic acid buildup and your muscles are sore. But the more you do it, the less you have those symptoms. So in my experience, it's really normal when you start to process this way to have that discomfort. But it's also really normal to get good at it and not have pain anymore with it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we need to work the body from both directions. Like, we work with our physiology and our physical body with tools like exercise and sleep and herbs and diet, right? Work that direction, work the symptoms from that direction, as well as working the mind,
the emotions.
Yeah.
Do both. And a few people are asking, are your slides going to be available? Because they want to review some of the charts. Can we make those available?
Yes, I can make those available.
Beautiful. We'll post it with the recording.
Yeah.
Let's see. There were a few others.
So I've got a question that relates to the one that Donna asked, if I can. And that is, with respect to these very early childhood memories of things that happened or might have happened, are we not better off just that we're, instead of trying to remember them, that we just don't remember them, blocking them off?
Yeah, that's a great question. What I think about it in terms of what is still alive in your system today. There's a lot of experiences we had that didn't affect us at all, that are not active in our system. But for many of us, some of those experiences are still alive in our system because we didn't get the full completion. If something happened to us, we get charged up. In the perfect world, we discharge and we're fine. We move on. As children, if we had, even as adults, if we have experiences where we get disrupted and we don't get to finish the charge, right? Then it might still be stuck in the system. So that's what I'm more concerned about. What's alive now that might be old, might not have been resolved back then. Well, I'm not going to go fishing with my clients. We're not going to go fishing for trauma that may or may not have happened. I teach people how to be curious about what's happening right now. And then sometimes a memory shows up. And that memory, in my experience, is always significant and useful.
Yeah, I love that approach, because I think that sometimes people spend years in therapy dredging up old stuff, and I don't think it does much good. You know, it just has you reliving it. And sometimes just becoming aware of something that maybe wasn't so quote unquote big, and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I made such a big thing of that. Let's just let that go. But a lot of times it is big. It is big, and bringing it back up and bringing it back into the nervous system can be dangerous, you know, and can be not helpful. So I think that and I've heard Laura say this a number of times, how you can just feel it. Doesn't matter what let's just bring up the feeling, and then release that feeling without having to remember the exact circumstance that brought the feeling up. Right.
And if there's been severe trauma, we work on titrating it. We don't like turn the hose on full volume immediately, right? Because your system can only tolerate so much. So as a trauma therapist, I'm working with people to ensure that they have enough tolerance so their system can handle discharging. If you've been holding on to an issue for many, many years to keep yourself safe from it, we don't want to just turn it on full blast, right? So I'm working with people to make sure that their system can tolerate working with it. And then we titrate it very slowly. And through the client system will tell me how much they can tolerate and how much they can't. So I'm working with people based on where they're at, not where they want to be, but because they just want it to go away. I just want to deal with this. I want to get it over with, right? But we've got to work with the system. And depending on their level of tolerance, we're wanting to increase their window of tolerance so they can tolerate looking at what they've been avoiding for, you know, many, many years. And learning to tolerate, because it's uncomfortable. Healing is uncomfortable many times, right? Looking at and bringing that old stuff to the surface is really, really uncomfortable. And so working with it very slowly and titrating it very delicately is right. important for people with severe trauma. Now, if you didn't have incredibly severe trauma, if you had really healthy attachment, you know, we still have defensive patterns. All of us have defensive patterns.
No matter how good it is.
Yeah. No matter how good. But when there is, we call it trauma with a big T, like really severe neglect, abuse, or traumatic experiences, we're very careful with titrating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could you share some stories to illustrate how this change can take place?
How this change can take, oh gosh. So do you want an example of like what therapy would look like, or just kind of a before and after?
You know, a case, you know.
I can tell you one of my personal experiences is that I was always very, very, very scared and shy. I was really embarrassed to be seen. I was really a shy little girl that was really scared of everybody and scared of the world. And I was a typical codependent woman. My father actually was in the Vietnam War. And so when he came back from the war, I was a very young child, and his post-traumatic stress had some psychosis as well. And so I remember through therapy, through working with a trauma therapist, I remember a particular event that I did some work on, and we very slowly kind of unwound that out of my system. And I remember deciding when I was about 2, that it's my job to take care of my dad because I knew he was sick. He was 2. I was 2, but I knew he was not healthy. He was sick. He was angry. He was violent. There was all that, but I knew he wasn't well. So I got wired into being scared of everything because my dad would get violent at any second. So my system was scared of the world. I also believe that it's my job to take care of everybody else. And I remembered through therapy the exact moment I decided that, because of an incident that I had with my dad. So I got wired into, I'm nervous, the world is scary, anybody can get mad at any time, and anger is bad, and anger is scary, and it's my job to make sure you're okay. So I became a very good therapist and healer because I was wired into this belief that that's my job in the world. But it also was very limiting for me because I was scared. I was scared to show my own emotions. I was scared of other people. So I lived a very shallow, scared life. So but what therapy did, what somatic therapy, not cognitive therapy, but somatic therapy, when I learned to work with my system and I learned to experience the fear that I had when I was a child, when my dad was angry and violent, I was able to discharge the anger and the frustration and the fear that I didn't get to express as a child. Now, as an adult, then I'm not as scared of the world. I'm more comfortable expressing myself, and I don't feel like I have to take care of everybody. Like I realized that was a belief that I got wired into because of the trauma and the stress. And now I know, oh, it's my pleasure to serve my clients and my family, but it's not my job to fix everything and take care of everybody at the expense of my own health. So that to me is my hope for my clients, is that I can help them get to the root of their story and belief that they're telling themselves, often is rooted in a stress or traumatic experience. It's drastic. Learn how to tolerate the discomfort of allowing yourself to feel what you've been trying not to feel for 50 years or 30 years or whatever. Sit with the client while they express, while they let it discharge out of their system. Teach them how to discharge it when it comes up in the present moment, how to discharge it appropriately, and change the story, man. That story of I'm not good and I'm only good if I take care of you and I'm responsible for you. Unhealthy, terrible story. So that's kind of the sequence that I want to work with. Awareness around the limiting issues, what's happening in your body. Is there anything stuck from the past that needs to be unwound? What's the story attached to the sensation in the body around that? And now how do we decide on a new story? And how do we go into life now with a new system and with these new belief system? Because it's scary and uncomfortable. When you've lived in a story, in a belief system, in a nervous system pattern for so many years, it takes a lot of practice and it takes a lot of, it's experiential. You have to have a new experience to reshape the nervous system.
So when you say cognitive versus somatic, could you give us an idea of that? Because I think some of us understand that and some, it's like, I'm not really sure what the difference between a somatic therapy and a cognitive therapy would be.
So a cognitive behavioral therapist is working with our logical thinking brain, our executive thinking skills, and our reasoning brain. But typically, that's not where the wounding happened. Typically, the wound happened, and often for those of us with childhood issues, the wound happened before we even had language. Right? So the stress or the trauma, the experience wasn't from our cognitive thinking reasoning brain, which wasn't even developed yet. Our experience is held in the physical body, not in the brain. So a cognitive therapist is going to give you reasoning skills, which is helpful, really, really helpful to be able to reason your way out of a situation. Especially remember that those of us that have a trauma history often have, we react kind of disproportionately to what's happening in the real world in the present moment because of the past. So the cognitive therapy skills can help us function in the present moment and use our reasoning brain to just manage it, right? But the root of it is still in our body. It's still living in our nervous system. So a somatic therapist doesn't care about the story or your reasoning ability. A somatic therapist is going to teach you how to tune into the body. Where is the trauma live in your body? Where is the stress or the disruption in your system? And how do you get in connection with that? How do you get in relationship with that? How do you understand the story you're telling yourself because of the charge that's still stuck there in the system? And it's going to give you tools to learn how to discharge it, right? If you don't know what to do with it, once it shows up, you can get overwhelmed. So a somatic therapist is going to help you with your body, help your body deal with it. As a cognitive therapist, they're going to help you with reasoning skills, which are, again, are very important, but not always able to, and can help you manage overwhelm and stress, but doesn't always help you resolve because the issue lives in the body, not in the cognitive thinking brain.
And the interesting thing about all that is that, so many times we have this really advanced functioning reasoning brain, and the reasoning brain doesn't even really believe some of the, like, why are you acting like that? This is a perfectly normal situation. Why did you act? And we bargain and reason and chastise ourselves from that reasoning mind. A lot of people have that really advanced reasoning mind. And if that was all it took, yeah, you know, these things would be a lot easier to get over for people with that highly developed reasoning mind. But because it's locked in the body, in the tissues, and in a response, in that cycle, you know, we think about the brain is wired, right? It's wired in a certain way, and it's stimulus response. And those shortcuts of stimulus to response get wired when there's something like a protection that happens over and over. And we have to create new stimulus response. Okay, here's the stimulus. Here's a new response to that same stimulus. And it takes repetition, repetition, repetition of a new way of not just thinking, but a new way of feeling into it. So I love that description of what you just gave.
Yeah, we call it top down or bottom up, right? And I think we need to work both, right? We do have a brilliant brain and we should use it, but it's not all of us, right? We also have this physiology that holds old stuff if it's not resolved. And so working with the energy and the physiology of the past experience so that we can move on and live in the present moment is really key. And Sandra, I'm actually just thinking of a client example I can share kind of along these lines. I have a morbidly obese client. She started at 400 pounds and she really believed that it was from her childhood sexual abuse. Her biological father sexually abused her. And so her mother found out about this when she was 5 and divorced him. And, you know, he is out of the picture. And she started, the mother started feeding the young girl to help her feel better. Mm. And so she gained a whole lot of weight. And over the years, she really thought cognitively that I'm overweight because I was sexually abused and I don't want to be seen. But she's 30 years old and she has been dieting her whole life and just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, even with her cognitive therapy, trying to understand logically what happened. She still couldn't change her eating patterns. Working with her system and teaching her how to go in and pay attention to her energy and to the charge in her nervous system, what she realized was she was overeating to please her mother. Not because of the sexual abuse, but because of the dynamic with her mother. Her mother was so scared of her being hurt again that the energy of the mother's overbearingness and overprotectedness was so overwhelming for her that she just ate to deal with it. And so the cognitive therapy was helpful for her, but until she really learned how to tune in and pay attention to her own charge, she didn't understand really the reasoning and the stories that she told herself and the subconscious stories that were driving her eating habits. So she's down now 40 pounds. Luckily it's been a slow thing, but it's slow and steady for her. And she's working on repairing her relationship with her mother. Totally unexpected, because we assumed it was a sexual abuse from the father. So
yeah, that's what the logical mind made sense of. That was what made the most sense.
Right. And now she's learning to express her thoughts to her mother instead of eat Ben and Jerry's. So it's helping.
There you go.
Helping.
Who else? Yeah, go ahead. Parjanya. Yay. Parjanya. Okay. I mean, there we go.
Thanks. Okay. So I've been wondering why I'm in this state of freeze. I call it paralysis because I don't know what else to call it. Never occurred to me it could have to do with the ACEs. So, Kimberly, I heard you mention breathing for that, but it was like, I don't remember what the breathing was that you suggested for the freeze. Mm-hmm. And also my second wondering around that is, in your program, Dr. Rita Marie, is there a way for those of us who know that we have, you know, 4 at least ACEs, can work with that within your program?
Yeah, well, I'll let Kimberly address that, but we are, this is a starting point, right, that we're bringing Kimberly in. Many of the coaches that are coaching the groups have been through the same training as Kimberly with Laura Fine and know some of those strategies and techniques. Laura and Janet and Lynn Rose and who else?
Lynn Johnson.
Both Lynns. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of who else, and Angelica, but she's not coaches, but she's on these calls with us. We've had this conversation with Kimberly and with Laura Fine about the classes that Laura's been teaching are for practitioners who want to teach this, but how do we do this for the people who need the work? And that's, we're going to be doing some of that in 2020, probably early on. Kimberly has a trauma class that she teaches, like the, you know, getting through, it's like a 4-hour, 2-workshop class. And we're going to make that available to, you know, as a more the public versus just to practitioners, as well as Laura's Dancing with Defenses next. I think the next time we do that is next year, next summer.
Spring. I think we're going to start in the
spring.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So those are ways, you know, to do that and bring some of this stuff up with your coaches. And because a lot of them, you know, if they don't have an answer, if they don't have the training, they can support you. And we're going to bring the coaches are going to be taking turns doing calls and support so that you can get some of that. A lot of the work really works well in person, but what we found was we were doing these two classes a year in person, and it was very hard for people to get away, you know, for 4 days or 5 days to be away and do it. That's the most useful way to do it when you're immersed like that. But right. We're going to be doing more of that, you know, on a global level online to help with that. Anybody that's in the Gold Plus, I believe, gets 3 calls with Kimberly one-on-ones. And Kimberly is also available as a, she can be bought. I don't know how busy.
I do have a private practice as well as teaching. Yeah. So
we can help you, you know, to get access to her as well that way. Yeah.
Okay. And so, Kimberly, what was the breathing that you suggested for the freeze state? So I don't remember what you said.
Right. So when we're frozen, we want to come up out of freeze. The breathing that's helpful is a more prominent inhale. So you can just do balanced breathing into, out to, into, out to, or you can do, I can't remember the name of it, but the yoga breath technique
pranayama,
but there's a specific one where we breathe in very lightly and exhale.
Oh yeah.
Oh, for your nose though, you could do
fire breath. Where are yoga teachers? So,
yeah, anybody yoga teacher remember that name of that one? But it's very normally it's not quite the breath of fire. It's John Diard just did a video on this. Dr. Diard, if anybody knows of him, he's an Ayurvedic. I can look it up. But the basic thing is to know inhaling is sympathetic. Exhaling is parasympathetic. So if we're needing to relax, we inhale 2, outhale 4, right? That's really great. If you need to boost your energy, then you can do like equal, inhale 2, exhale 2, or you can force the exhale a little bit more. And you want to get some expansion in your breath. If you're frozen, you're not likely breathing deeply and expansively, right? So the inhale, exhale through the nose, but it's very passive on the inhale, powerful on the exhale, is going to actually bring energy, where normally a longer, more extensive exhale is going to bring you, calm you. But it's the, you want to literally feel your diaphragm moving, feel the jerking of your exhale. That's going to stimulate, even massage the diaphragm area. And sometimes for people that are frozen, they're really stuck. The fascia between their diaphragm and their rib cage is like really stuck. And so if you can massage yourself through there under the rib cage a little bit and gently kind of pull that open, you can have a bigger expansive breath. You can bring more air down into your deeper part of your lungs. But that's a little more complicated. So I always just tell people, inhale 2, exhale 2 if you need more energy. If you need to relax, inhale 2, exhale 4. Simple. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I've been doing a lot more belly breathing in the last, 6 months or so, ever since I like realized how shallow, or maybe the last year since I realized how shallow my breathing is. And so maybe belly breathing isn't the best thing for me right now in freeze.
It's all an experiment. So you just got to see what really works for you. But in my experience, people that are frozen often, their connective tissue and their muscles can be also really frozen as well. And okay. So what can you do to bring life back into your body and your muscles, right? It's uncomfortable. Coming out of freeze is scary to your nervous system. So you have to be able to tolerate the discomfort. You have to do it even though your nervous system tells you it's not safe. So many people try and they struggle because the signals their body's telling them is that it's not safe to come alive. It's not safe to come out of freeze. So you fall back into freeze.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we will, Laura's going to come in and do a session with us as well. So to focus on some of this stuff. So that will be happening probably. I mean, we've been cramming so many calls into you guys. I don't want to overwhelm, but October or November. Yeah. Oh, wait. When does she come back? She'll be in
she'll be in India until
October. So maybe November we'll have her come in. And
yeah. She, till the end of October, she's gone.
Till the end of October. Yeah. And Kimberly and Laura are going to do a session at Shine. So those of you who are signed up for the live stream, it's on Tuesday, Saturday at around, I'm thinking 3, 2, 3, something like that in the afternoon, Saturday afternoon at some point, they're going to do a session on it as well. There's a lot. Anybody else have questions to ask them? And I'm looking through and I'm grabbing out questions out of the chat. So I'll bring those up to the open. Who else has any? And is there an activity? I mean, I don't know what you meant by that, Angelica. You said something about doing something. So explain what.
Oh, I just noticed mid session a lot of people were getting really charged, and I just wanted to bring that to Kimberly's awareness. And I understand there's a lot of us on the call, so we can't all do an energetic check in. But I thought it would be nice to do some kind of integration, I guess, at the end, because this is a lot of like great information,
a lot of great stuff,
and I think a lot of inner energy has moved. And
yeah, that's a really good point. So some of the questions that I've seen come in here are from Brandon. He said, every time I'm in public, I observe how parents treat their children. I really started to connect all these things Kimberly talks about a few years ago, and I see it now. It doesn't have to be anything super traumatic, like she says. Even if simple emotional needs aren't nurtured, it can still carry with you your whole life. I picked this up and learning a lot more about myself. I think that that's so true. And that, you know, just a parent going, come on, get over here. You know, and when the kid needs something, it's just like ignoring the need, then that gets locked into your nervous system as I'm not worthwhile. I don't deserve. I, you know, and we take that as a something wrong with me versus it's a parent with a lack of parenting skills, not a lack of love, a lack of good parenting skills, right? Not knowing how to love or how to express love.
Right.
Yeah.
And we tell ourselves this story, and then later as we grow older, something similar happens, different set of people, different reality, but our nervous system feels the familiar sense and the story kicks in.
Yeah. And I will, just from my perspective, I didn't get beaten. I didn't get hit. I didn't get abused, nothing. But I was always a good student. And I remember this incident that just keeps coming up. And I think I finally discharged the energy around it, but it's driven me throughout my whole life. Is I got a 92 on my report card instead of a 98. And instead of, wow, you know, what happened there? Is that, oh, great. Is that the best you could do? What's wrong? You know, what happened? And maybe that's not even how it came across. Maybe it was, wow, is something distract, you know, it may have come across from my mother, may have thought she was saying it in a loving way. Oh, did you do your best? Are you distracted? But I took it as, you're not good enough. You're not good enough unless you're getting a 98. You're not good enough unless you're top of the class. You're not good enough unless you're working really hard. And I've taken that on.
Yeah.
You're not good enough. So right. You have to give and give and give. And it's simple things like that we tell a story. Like I tell the story. I wasn't there. I don't have a videotape. Mm-hmm. I don't know what she really meant or said, but what I took, the story I told myself was I wasn't good enough. I didn't work hard enough. And that programmed itself as trauma in my nervous system.
You know, and that it becomes habit. And it's so hardwired that when we try, we logically know we can relax, we're good enough, right? We know logically, but our body doesn't let us do it differently because the body thinks you're going to die if you don't do it this way. And so it can take a while to be able to tolerate the discomfort of the fear of death. And it literally is. Your nervous system feels like if it doesn't behave accordingly, it doesn't do things the same way, you could die. It's that serious. So most of us live as slaves to our body instead of in being in charge of what we want and manifesting and creating the health and the life we want by telling our body what to do. Most of us, our body is telling us how to behave. And that's not very empowering. So my hope is to help people shift that and learn how to tolerate the discomfort of your body not liking what you're doing, right? Like extreme athletes are really good at tolerating discomfort, right? They can make their body do stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
It's the same thing when we're recovering from stress and trauma, is that we have to go through the discomfort of things that feel like we'll die if we do that.
Yeah.
And that's not an exaggeration. Your nervous system is really telling you, if you behave that way, you'll die.
That's what fight flight is. That's what that protective mechanism is. That's what that arousal is. Just protect yourself. Adrenal glands, they're there to keep you alive.
Yeah.
Right.
And so if you're in frozen, it's not safe to come out of freeze unless you have some tolerance in your nervous system to the sensation and have a solution once you get back into fight or flight. Because you don't go from frozen to calm and relaxed. The nervous system doesn't work that way. You go from frozen back up into fight or flight. And that's anxious and uncomfortable. And that's hot after you've been cold and frozen and
right.
Neutral, right? Now you're up to anxiety, hot, it's anxious. The nervous system goes, we don't like this. We're going to freeze again. Right. So it's really hard to get over that hump for people that have been frozen, to get over that, because you have to tolerate the discomfort of the fight or flight. And then you have to resolve the fight or flight. And so that's why if it's trauma with a big T, it's really important to work with somebody who has some experience that can help you titrate that experience, but also know when to push you forward, because your system, everything within you is going to scream, no, I can't do that. No, I can't do that.
I had a question, Kimberly. How do you know the difference between just a natural response, because you're just so used to responding in a certain way to stressful situations, versus it is the result of a traumatic experience? Mm-hmm. Is it because it's kind of dysfunctional the way you respond? I mean, how do you identify those things?
So I'd ask you, how's it working for you? Right? How is that behavior working for you in your life? Do you have the life and the health that you want? And if not, then we can look at some of these things and we can go, oh, okay, this is what's not working for me. And typically people know, my relationships aren't working, or I'm too scared to start my own business, or they have these limited beliefs. And there's the shoulds and the always and the never, kind of these, you can hear in their expressions, the limiting belief that's involved in their patterns. People that don't have that are more willing to show up in the world. They're more willing to take risks.
Right. Risk taking. Yeah. You know, and then there's the other extreme of the extreme risk taking, and that's another story for another day. But but that, you know, healthy risk taking versus always know I've got to stay safe. And what you said about going from freeze, you have to go through the fight flight to get into the parasympathetic, is similar to like depression, right? So a lot of people develop depression because what they're really feeling is anger and outrage, but depression is safer because they've been taught, you know, to keep quiet and don't get angry, and it's evil and it's bad. And so sometimes to get over depression, you have to go through rage and anger, and people get scared when that happens because they, other people around them don't like it, and then they fall back into depression. So it's like, to get out of it, you do have to get out and expand your comfort zone so that you can go, okay, this is part of my healing process. I'm going to be pissed. And you can tell your family, you know what? I'm going to be really pissed off for a couple of weeks here because I'm working through some stuff. So don't take it personally, but this is going to be coming out, right? Lynn always says that she warns her family when she's doing a liver cleanse or something, because the liver is this anger organ in Chinese medicine. And you know that sometimes when you're releasing that, you're just going to seem a little aggravated and irritated. But if you shut it down, then it's turned inward, and anger turned inward is depression, right? And fight flight turned inward is freeze. Fight flight, when it's surrounded by, you know, excessive fear, goes into freeze, right? Because it takes some courage to run away, or to fight. Fight takes probably the most courage.
Well, and energy. And you're going to run out of energy at a certain point. You cannot stay in sympathetic dominance forever. Your body will shut down. You will go into freeze for protection. It's a survival mechanism. You can't be in freeze forever. And the energy of the emotion, if it's stifled instead of expressed, is going to change your physiology, right? Our cells respond to the environment. And if your environment is repressed anger, your cells are responding to that.
Mm-hmm.
So learning how to sense it, tune into it is a big deal. Because if you're frozen, you're checked out, you're dissociated. You can't tune in on purpose. Like it's a defensive mechanism to not feel. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I often do with clients with trauma is make it safe enough for them to co-regulate with me so they can tolerate feeling what they've been trying to not feel for however many years. Right.
Yeah.
And it's big trauma. It takes a trained therapist for that.
Yeah. I mean, the small T's, the trauma with the small T's, we can discharge and do things in a group setting. Mm-hmm. And we're happy to, as coaches, and I, have had this training. I'm not quite as far along as Kimberly and some of the others, but I've had a lot of this training as well and could support you in a group setting. But when we're dealing with that big T stuff, it may be helpful to at least get a few sessions with a trained therapist so you have some techniques and tools, and then maybe you feel safe in a group kind of setting. And I know Laura does a lot of that with working with people before she takes them into a group. She'll have like a 3-session type of thing with people, and then, you know, it's safer for them to go in to the big group.
And then once you've learned the skill, you can then typically do it on yourself. You don't have to have a therapist forever or a practitioner forever, right? Because these are simply skills. And when it's disrupted, when that developmental stage is disrupted as children and we don't learn how to regulate our own system, we suffer as adults. But we can learn how to regulate our own system, and we can learn how to discharge. We can learn how to honor the natural or an organic flow of the charge and discharge of things that come into our life, and we can manage it. And then we're in charge of our life. We're not in control of everything that happens around us and to us, but we can be in charge of how our system responds. Mm-hmm. And that's really my hope, is to help people have that skill.
And the encouraging thing is that it is doable, that it is learnable. I'm going to be doing a special session on this book, Accessing the Healing Power of the Vagus Nerve. And like I said, I just ordered 2 more of those.
That's cool.
I could help you, you know, give you some tools. But in that book, he actually has some physical things that you can do on your body. We know that there's some things you can do to activate the vagus nerve, like singing loudly till you cry and sticking a tongue depressor down your throat until you gag and cry, and having a cup of enema until you cry, and gargling until you cry. And you see the theme here. And it's like, people go, do I really have to, is there like a non-crying, non-painful way to activate my vagus nerve, please? And there are, and that, this book, he's a cranial sacral therapist, and he shares a lot of really good techniques. And like Kimberly said, some people could just learn it if you're very, if you have a real easy way of converting like reading into your body awareness. I know one of my kids can do that. One of them can't. I can't. It's like, I have to have somebody show me or do it with me, and then I could get it. If I just read it, I'm like, do I call here? And then I go here, and what is this? And so, but they have these great exercises in the book. So if you are real coordinated, if you're a dancer, you'd probably be able to just read the book and figure it out. If you're not, and you have 4 left feet like I do, you need somebody to help and to do it with you. But there's some great exercises in there, and there are therapists in various ways. Are there ways that people could find somebody that they could work with to get some of the hands-on stuff in their area? They're like organizations.
You know, I'm sure there are. I'm not really familiar with that, if there's any specific ones, but you could Google somatic therapist, and there's different types of somatic. Cranial sacral is an excellent, mm-hmm. acupuncture is great. Any kind of hands-on body work with a therapist you trust, because the human connection itself is probably way more powerful than the technique. So just having a practitioner that you really feel safe with and that you can really allow yourself to relax with their hands on you, that is the most powerful healing tool.
Yeah. And there's places, there's certain techniques, and I can't remember. I took a class in it 20 years ago.
Trauma release exercises, TRE. There's a lot.
I think that was it. We find the location of the trauma, where it might be physically locked on your body, and then do some techniques to release it. So those are really helpful things that can be done in addition to what we're doing here. And we have the pillars, which we'll be taking you through and learning how to, you know, the attitude pillar and the looking at beliefs and limiting beliefs and things like that. But yeah, if it's the big T, you probably want to get some of the hands-on or one-on-one kind of work with that. Anybody else? I'm going to look to see.
Donna, you have a question?
Yeah, Donna, go ahead.
Yeah, so when you have all these different traumas and they've settled in your body, is there always like, if this happened, it always settles in this spot or anything? Like, how do you know where in your body something is stuck?
That's a great question, Donna. And there's so many different traditions of healing that will tell you this means this. And I don't care about any of them. I want you to have the ability to tune in and find out what it means for you.
Yes.
So you can learn all about all different kinds of theory, but I don't care about any of it. I want to know what you are experiencing. So tuning in to wherever the pain or discomfort or problem is and learning to let your body tell you what it needs. I think that's the most important skill, is awareness of yourself. So those are fun. Like, I remember, how old was I? Maybe 11 or 12 when I got Louise Hay's book, like, You Can Heal Your Life. And she has a list of, if you have this disease, it means you think this and it's correlated to this. And, you know, I just don't think any of that matters. I think what matters is what you think it means.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say is, when you get into a riled up state, if you can have the cognition to be able to do it, is to stop and say, where do I feel this? Right? That's the question. Whenever, you know, you're working with somebody like Laura or Kimberly, they'll, or somebody trained like that, they'll say, okay, I see you tightening here. I see this happening. Where in your body are you feeling this? And I remember doing this with somebody, and as soon as she tuned in, a whole flood of something she'd never shared before came up, and she was able to release that. So it's like, when you actually, because what you do is you stop the feeling. That's because you don't want to feel it. So if you're feeling like, oh, I feel like it's just getting stuck right here. Yeah, that's a way to work on that and release it. And sometimes just taking your hands and putting it over and just repeating something like, you're safe. You're safe. I'm here. You're safe. You're safe. Right? And that can be very helpful.
Your body will tell you what you need to know to be healthy and whole. But we need to learn the language of our body.
Yeah.
Most of us aren't taught that. And then we don't trust the messages we do get. So we got to learn how to listen and trust the messages.
Diana says, why didn't they teach us this in school? This should be required classes in all schools.
Yeah, right.
Because we're not taught this stuff. We're not taught, you know, how to regulate and how to tune into emotions. A lot of times we're taught to shut down the emotions, whether it be by shut up and my mother, children should be seen and not heard. Yeah. Right? Do as I say, not as I do, and not don't question authority. And so we hear that a lot. And if you go to church or synagogue or whatever, it's always that same, you know, do not speak up about this. Do not ask questions. And I taught my kids question everything. I said, I was taught do not question authority. I taught my kids question authority. Question everything that doesn't feel right to you. If I say it to you and you're saying, that doesn't feel right, you bring it up to me. If your teacher says it in a respectful way, you question. You don't blindly follow authority. And I remember once, I used to always say to my kids, you know, when they were very little, and I'd say, oh, you know, I never said you're a bad girl, you're a bad boy. I didn't have girls, but I would hear other parents say, you're such a bad boy. Why did you do that? You're such a bad boy. Why did you do that? And I would always say something like, you know, the behavior wasn't appropriate, but you're just fine. And one day my kid got me so frustrated. I said, why are you being such a bad boy today? And he was three, less than three. And he turned to me and he said, Mommy, I'm not a bad boy. I just did a bad thing. And I'm like, oh, you know, right? And that's what we want kids to, I'm not bad. You know, I make mistakes. I just made everybody, don't worry, mommy, everybody makes mistakes. Like if I did something and I was being upset with myself, it's like, don't worry, mommy, everybody makes mistakes. And I'll never forget that, you know? So kids pick up what we give them. And if we make mistakes occasionally and we yell at them or, you know, swat the bottom when we, what did I just do? Oh my God, what am I going to do? I'm the worst parent in the world. No, everybody makes mistakes, right? And it's the message and how you handle that. Like, you know, I was very upset today and it had nothing to do with you. I was upset about, you know, the garbage man who spilled garbage all over the lawn and I just took it out on you and I'm very sorry, right? And if we're always there for everybody, not just children, but especially children, to admit when we make a mistake, apologize for making a mistake and ask how we can make it right. But that stuff didn't happen to us, right? And so we get locked into this pattern of I'm not good and I'm bad and I don't deserve. And there's the trauma that gets locked in our body and it needs to be released.
Right.
So in answer to Sarjana's question about how do we have support, we're here to support you through this. So if you feel like this is the support you need and I feel like it's something we can do and you're comfortable doing, you know, in an environment like this where we can do some activities and we could bring Kimberly back on or Laura on to maybe guide us through some activities to tune in to part of the body and let go as long as you're comfortable in an environment. But we, you know, if we detect that there's some serious stuff that really is not safe to do or discharge in a group, we'll let you know, right? And let you know how to get support. Okay.
Thank you for saying that because for me, what I've been struggling with, you know, during this whole process is the lack of personal empowerment that you have to give over your ability to heal to somebody else, whether that's a temporary paid situation or whatever. And, you know, but I can understand because of, you know, people with high ACE scores, they don't trust other people, that having to trust other people could be part of the healing process itself. So
exactly.
I've been struggling with that. I had 5 ACEs between age 2 and 5 and then a couple more after that. So, you know, so that's part of, you know, I think why handing over the ability to heal to somebody else rather than, you know, taking empowerment and ownership of it myself has been a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, so, and taking charge and ownership is a good thing, right? Empowerment for ourselves, empowered self-care, but knowing when to ask for help, right? Knowing when you can't do it by yourself, right? Yeah.
Right. And making the ultimate decision is yours. So you have a trusted practitioner, but you are in charge of the decision of what's right for you. And right. Sometimes that's the first step with healing is learning how to hear your inner wisdom and your inner voice that's right. Telling you what's right exactly. For you. Because it is there. It's there.
It is there. It's been squashed for a long time. But if you make the time to sit quietly, right, even if it's a minute or two a day and you just take the time to sit quietly and sit with it, it will start to speak to you. It will start to speak to you, you know.
Great.
And you may not like what it's saying. You have to be aware of that. You know, you may not like what it's saying because it may be indicating that there's some action you need to take that's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Anybody else? If you wrote a question in or a comment in that you want to be heard, please. I tried to catch them all, but you know, they go by and it's hard to see. Did anybody else have anything? Any question, comment, observation? Can we just do like a group breathing exercise as a closing? Kimberly, yeah. Would you like to lead us?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Let's just do that. Cause I think that we've processed a lot. It's been a lot in your head, but also it's a lot in your body and in your heart. And I'd love for us to have some closure that helps us to.
Yeah. I'm going to do just a quick activity that I call a resource. And what that means is, and have you go to a place in your mind that has been a really peaceful, happy place for you. Okay. And I'm going to kind of guide you. So just come up with a time in your life, a great vacation, a spot on the beach, a family vacation house, an imaginary place. It could be an underwater crystal cave or another planet. Just in your mind, take yourself to a place where you feel very safe and happy. And close your eyes, noticing your breath. I want to bring in all of your senses. So wherever you're at, are you sitting or standing? Notice what it feels like under your body. What does it feel like on your feet or on your skin? Is it sand? Is it water? Notice the sensation on your skin. Feel it. I'm feeling the green grass under my legs as I lay on the grass. Notice how good it feels on your skin. Is there sunshine coming down on your skin? Feels warm? Is there a cool breeze? What is the sensation in your body as you're in this happy place? Notice if there's any smell. Do you smell the grass or the ocean? The beautiful flowers? The bark of the tree. Notice the delicious smell and the sensation on your skin. What do you hear in this place? What are the sounds that surround you? Just so joyful to hear the sound. You can smell this amazing scent. You feel the sensation on your skin. What do you see? You look around you, take in the scenery, 360 degrees. Noticing it's one of your favorite places, how happy you are to be there. The emotion of what it's like to be there, calm, happy, blissful, peaceful, safe. Your whole body feels the safety in being in this place. Notice what your breath is doing. Just know that this is a place that you can come back anytime if you need to reset. If your system is feeling out of balance, if you're feeling out of whack, come into this place and bring in all of your senses. Bring in the scent and the sensation on your skin and the beautiful view, the amazing sounds. And notice that how that puts you into this blissful, joyful, peaceful place. You can do this anytime because your body doesn't know the difference between this fantasy or a past memory or the physical present reality. You have the power just through your imagination. If you bring in all of the senses, you can shift your state of being in just seconds or minutes. So this is a place you can come anytime you need to reset. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes, connect with the group again. Can't see all of your faces, but it's such a joy to be with you and to see those of you who I can see. Thank you so much for giving me so much time to talk about the thing I'm most excited to talk about.
And thank you for taking so much time to be here with us. Yes. And we had a great turnout. A lot of folks came to hear you today, and a lot of us are walking away. And if anybody wants to share, I'd love to just go around and just, you know, just one word as we part, a word for Kimberly, or a word for each other, or a word for yourself. Just one word that comes to mind as we part. Who wants to start? Pat, would you like to share one?
Gratitude.
Gratitude. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you.
Angela.
Appreciation.
Thank you. Donna. Oops, she's muted. Oops, I didn't hear you, Donna.
Frustration.
Jay, did you have one?
Did you say Jenny? I was actually thinking appreciation as well.
Appreciation, great. I said Jay, but that's okay.
Oh, okay.
Yay, Jenny. Yeah. Did Jay have one? Maya, did you have one?
Encouraged.
Encouraged, great. Parjana? Parjanya.
What came for me is awareness.
Awareness, awesome. Nice one.
Okay, thank you.
How about Sandra?
A big thank you. And hopeful.
What was the word?
Hopeful.
Hopeful, I like that. Yeah, nice. Thank you. Angelica, did you have one?
Awe and curiosity.
Nice. Nice. Beautiful. JF, I don't know if you tried to unmute or not, but if you want to open it, I don't want to put anybody on the spot if they don't want to. So anybody else? There's a few others on here now. Just open up your lines. Thank
you. Oh, relief.
Relief.
Timely.
Timely, yeah.
So timely. I just, amazing. Divinely timely.
Awesome. Divinely timely. I love it. Love it. Susanna, who else do I see? Brandon, you guys are welcome to open up your lines. I don't see you, but I see your names.
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness, yeah. That's a great one. Annie. Hanaora. I don't know if Hanaora knows how to unmute. I'll unmute you, Hanaora, in case you don't. Did you have one, Hanaora? Janet? Jill? Jules? We have a lot of J's. Gratitude. A lot of people whose name starts with J. Who's gratitude? Yeah. Gratitude. And the Lynns. We have two Lynns. Anything from them?
Oh, for me, Marilyn, love.
Love. Love it. Love it.
Peaceful.
Peaceful. Beautiful. Awesome.
Patience.
Patience. Yeah. We all need that. Yeah. Susan, you had your hand up. Was there something more? There you are. Yeah.
No, I'm on my phone and I'm being a dork as far as knowing how to work it. Just, I'm sitting in my truck. I was in town today, so I'm sitting at Central Market.
Should I come visit? Well, thank you so much, Kimberly. This is awesome. I think it touched everybody on a deep level. It may have stirred some things up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, be kind to yourself. Take a bath. Do some breathing, go to bed early. You know, if it stirred anything up for you that is uncomfortable, know that that's the process in it. And instead of reaching for, you know, the Hershey's Kisses or the ice cream or whatever, you know, reach for something that's truly nourishing that can support you, right? Something like a bath or like something you really enjoy doing that's going to help support your nervous system.
And if you are totally overwhelmed and you reach for the ice cream, watch yourself. Just notice, wow, this is what I'm doing, right? Just really watch yourself with curiosity instead of judgment.
I love that.
That's possible, yeah. Right? Yeah. To be in curiosity instead of judgment or feeling in and of itself, right?
It is. And it's a first step, right? It's an awareness and then, you know, the four stages. I went over this with Jenny the other day, right? We talked about unconscious incompetence, conscious incompetence, and that's the most uncomfortable. When you're in unconscious incompetence, ignorance is bliss, right? But once you get to conscious incompetence, we get hard on ourselves, and we want to move from conscious incompetence to conscious competence. And conscious competence is where it's a struggle. We got to work at doing these right things. And then eventually you do get to unconscious competence.
But we work through the nervous system because your logical brain isn't enough.
Yes.
We need to rewire the old pattern that's in the nervous system.
Right. And that's where the conscious and unconscious comes in, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's beautiful. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you for spending the time. And I don't think we have any, no, we don't have any calls for the rest of the week, but we're off to shine on our live event. So some of you are going to join us by live stream, and some of us are going to join us in and Lynn, and I'll be seeing all of you guys in person. So. And then on the Saturday, Kimberly and Laura are going to be doing a talk. So tune in.
Learn more then.
Much love. Mwah. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.